To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. And hope everything is working out for you. I don't know about you guys, but my wife has had me garage sailing all morning long, right?
Yes, but I think you found a couple things, too. So
yeah, I bought life vests for the grandkids so that when they were on the boat that they had life vests and stuff like that. But
nightstick to
oh, yeah, I bought an old nightstick. No, come on. I used to be a policeman, and I have my original leather. I have my original pistola. Mm-hmm. I have my original mace, all the your tool belt.
Right.
But the only thing I didn't have, or at least I don't think I had, was a nightstick.
Right.
And so I found one for $4, mm-hmm. and so that kind of completes for Halloween. You know, you look good.
Oh yeah,
when you're that way,
no question.
Anyway, we're going to talk about cars, and if you have a car question or car problem, you're welcome to join us 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Two things I want to bring up.
Okay.
Number one, we had a guy call in, mm-hmm. and he was a little aggravated. He wasn't rude about oil changes.
Oh yeah,
and he said that. A 10,000-mile, an 8,000-mile, a 6,000-mile oil change was just against God's law.
Yeah.
It just was bad.
I think he was most wound up about the 10,000 miles.
Yeah. But he wasn't rude or anything like that. He was just real passionate, I guess is the word.
Right.
And then he talked about oil does this after so many miles, but it isn't true. I don't remember what he said, but I know that it is.
Oh,
true.
Yeah. It changed.
Oxidizes.
It oxidizes. I think that's what he said. And okay. So it ruins your car. And yeah.
Okay. And let me just kind of clear up any confusion that we may have just created. First of all, do you know what pour point is?
No. I mean, I've heard it, but I don't remember.
Okay. Pour point is when the oil will pour out of the can on a cold morning.
Okay.
Okay. So pour point. It's three different pour points depending on your oil. Conventional uh-huh. oil, which is what we call, you know, regular oil.
Right.
Regular oil pours out at about 25 to 30 depending on the brand.
Okay.
Below zero.
25, okay.
25 to 30 below zero. Semi-synthetic, blended oil, is a little higher than that. So maybe 30 to 40, 45.
Below.
Below zero.
Okay.
But a synthetic oil will pour out of the can at 50, 60 below zero.
Okay.
So otherwise it's wax.
All right.
So the oil turns to solid. And, of course, if you're in 60 below Wisconsin or Minnesota weather, it's not a good idea. Plus, your motor probably won't start because you'll never develop any oil pressure. So that's kind of a pour point. Now, oxidation is when the oil turns to a tar. That's the technical term for it is oxidation.
Okay.
So regular oil about 275 to 300, somewhere around there. It turns to a tar. Synthetic oil or semi-synthetic oils is in the middle. So let's say it's 350, 375, but synthetic at 500.
Okay.
Okay. So synthetic doesn't turn to a tar. It doesn't burn to a tar until 500 degrees. Here's the problem with that idea is the fact is your motor is toast at about 275. So when you get up to 275, I don't care what kind of oil you have in there, the oil will still be fine, and it won't turn to toast. It won't turn to a black tar, but the rest of your engine will. So
it'll be gone anyway.
Exactly. So it doesn't really make any difference. But that extra wide window of protection does give you a little bit more protection. Say, for instance, my mother or you were out late at night sometime and you had an overheat and you needed to drive it another half a mile to safety.
Mm-hmm.
So with a synthetic oil, you're more than likely to make that other half a mile. But with a conventional oil, you may or may not. So that kind of, and of course, cold weather, we don't worry about cold weather in Arizona, so it doesn't really make any difference.
Right.
Regular oil has an oil change capability of 3,000 to 4,500 miles, somewhere around in there. Actually, I'm going to go to 3,000.
Yeah.
3,000 or less. That's just regular oil, and that oil change is somewhere between $35 and $40 around town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, semi-synthetic, which is a blended oil, but folks, this is what it means by blended oil. They don't tell you what percentage it is of conventional and what percentage of synthetic. So it could be a 90% conventional oil, the old-fashioned oil, and it could be 10% the Microsoft new oil.
Okay.
Or it could be 50-50. They won't tell you. But that's a blended oil. I know our oil change is about 40, 42,
yeah,
40.
It runs a little over 40. We've had to raise it because we've had 10 oil increases in the last, I don't know, year.
Less, maybe
6 months.
6 months.
And we hadn't raised it till just recently. Yeah. So.
And we were eating all those raises, right. But it was 5 and 10 cents a gallon.
I think a quart.
I thought it was a gallon. But anyway, if it's a quart, then it's 40 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
And it follows the gasoline prices anyway.
Right.
So at the end of the day, then you have, after you have regular oil, conventional oil, the old-fashioned oil, then you have a blended oil, a half synthetic, half conventional, and then you have full synthetic.
Right.
And synthetic runs up from, well, 3,000 on the conventional, 3,000 to 4,500 or so on the semi-synthetic, 4,500 to 7,500 miles plus or minus on the full synthetic, and some of them will go up to 10,000 miles. I know that our 540 diesel oil goes up to 10,000 miles because that's what I'm doing.
Right.
Now, folks, there's a lot of discussion about the filters. So there's lots of older guys that are resigned to the fact that they're going to change their filter and halfway through an oil change and give new life to their oil.
Doesn't work. No.
It doesn't work. There's no such renovation that can happen. Now, if your oil filter is a 20-micron oil filter, microns, really small pieces of trash, to take one off and put another one on is going to do the same thing. It's not going to rejuvenate your oil. It's just going to continue to filter at 20 microns. I haven't seen an oil filter that was plugged up in 30 years except for when we end up with a tremendous water leak in with the oil, and then the water and the oil turns into a white mud.
Foamy, and
foaming mud, or a brown chocolate milkshake, and that will plug up a filter. But the consistency of what we're talking about is frosting on a cake.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to plug the filter.
Yeah.
But in reality, your chances of using your filter longer than it can handle your car is slim and none.
Right. Well, and he was thinking that, you know, he just thought that you were way out there saying go 10,000 miles. Well, a lot of the major oil brands make them to go 10,000 miles. It's right on the container, 10,000 miles. And don't some of the new cars come with that you don't have to change your oil for 10,000 miles?
Not only that, is Mobil 1 is a 9 to 10, I could be wrong on this, 9 to 10,000 miles, but Mobil 1 extended now goes to the 12 or 13 or 15, which is what Mercedes-Benz is talking about.
Right.
So Mobil came out with an oil that goes, okay, well, you can use ours 8 to 10,000. Oh, there's somebody bigger? Okay, we're going to call it extended.
Right.
Now, what about all these claims that if you use our oil additives, we guarantee your engine to be fine? There's a lot of chemicals that you put in your car, you put in your radiator, you do all this fancy stuff, or you use our oil, or better yet, your oil additive. If you use our oil additive, then we're going to guarantee your motor. That is so much crap that you look at the business end of that, and you have to do your maintenance, and you have to do it at this time, and you have to do it with their people, and you have to use their additive every time. And the fact of the matter is how many bad motors do we see in a month?
I don't know. Couple, three, four sometimes.
Okay, I'm going to say no because if we do four a month, then you're doing 50 motors a year. That's almost one a week, and we're not doing one a week.
No, but sometimes, okay, it comes in spurts. And I know we just had three or four.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I guess, you know, average it out maybe one, two a month.
All right, so if we're doing 20 cars a day and 5 days, that's 100 a week. So 50 weeks on top of 100, what's that? What's 100 times 50? 5,000?
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing 5,000 cars.
Okay.
So if we do two a week, we're only doing 110 cars, engines.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is now, on the engines that we do, do you have a feeling on whether they were worn out or whether they were damaged by the nut behind
the wheel?
I
don't think I've ever seen one worn out. Well, it's always somebody ran it hot or, you know,
smoked
something.
It.
Yeah.
And there, we have done some that were burning oil so bad, they were smoking, it was embarrassing to drive the car.
Right.
And once you develop all that internal pressure, then the engine starts blowing gaskets because the pressure's like trying to push its way out of the engine, so it wipes out gaskets and seals and stuff like that. So, yeah, we do an older one. But if people just reside themselves to watch the dashboard and don't let the temperature gauge get into the red zone, and don't let the oil get into the red zone, the oil pressure, which is on the left side of the gauge, right, and the temperature's on the right side. If they never do that, then they're not going to experience a bad motor.
Right. Well, in the oil change interval, you know, go 3,000 miles or go 4,500 miles or whatever, but that doesn't mean that you don't ever have to check your oil in that time either.
And so that's the real problem.
Right.
Because people think they're going to put in the extended oil for 12,000 miles, but they don't have to check their oil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real problem because all cars consume oil to some extent.
Right.
Some of them are going to be a quarter of a quart low on 3,000 miles. Some of them are going to take 6,000 miles to be a half a quart.
Mm-hmm.
But at 6,000 miles, then 12,000 miles, we're a full quart.
Right.
Now, let me ask you.
Okay.
Mrs. Car Guy's wife.
Right.
2 minutes.
All right. You look at the dipstick. How do you know when it's a quart low?
Isn't it under the add mark?
It's at the add mark.
Okay.
It's at the
or below.
Well, at the add mark, it's a quart low.
Right.
And below that, it's a quart plus.
Okay.
So you don't add oil till it gets to the add mark or below it.
Right.
It's a bad idea to add a quart of oil when it's between the add and the full. Because if it's between the add and the full, it's okay.
It's not a quart low.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's not a quart low till it gets to the add mark or below that.
Right.
So you failed that test.
I just thought I'd tell you. Okay. All right.
Well, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They opened up in 1976. They're on the second generation. There's two young men that have taken over for their father. They have three locations to serve you. These two boys have been around since they were old enough to sweep cigarette butts off the parking lot, if you remember that.
Kind of like our kids.
Our kids the same. So S&S has three locations in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a really big, comprehensive lines of tires, different brands, different sizes, and they have any tire you want for your personal vehicle, plus depends on what you do, but wheelbarrows to tractors, big trucks, and everything in between. They're capable of giving you three menus. The best tire, the good tire, and the premium tire, or the
good,
economy
better,
tire.
Best.
Yeah, good, better, best, or economy, and good, and then best.
Yeah.
So if you go in and you just say, would you give me three prices for the three tires and give me the brands, they can pull that off for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for new tires on the west side, then S&S Tires is who I would suggest you at least stop by and look at what they've got. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we come back, if you're on the phone, we'll give you an opportunity to ask your question, and then we'll do our best to answer it. We'll be right back. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here from 10 to noon talking about cars and car repair issues. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. It's a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop, and he has great technicians that do domestic and foreign light-duty diesel trucks. So they're really good at what they do, and I can vouch for them. And just like I am right now, I'm telling you, they do good work. I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs, open Monday through Friday, and they must sell. They sell all their parts 24 hours a day on their website as well, so you can go there and look at the different diesel stuff that you might want to take a look at. And just real quick, I wanted to say on the oil we were talking about, the first segment, Roger, I'm going to get to you in just a second. There's a real significance about the three different oils for people and how they drive. For instance, the people in Mountain Park Ranch and Ahwatukee that are across the freeway from us, there's a lot of people that do 3,000 miles a year.
Right.
We have them on a conventional oil change, and we bring them in April or May.
Right.
Because we want them to go through the summertime with fresh oil. Mm-hmm. But at 3,000 miles, we wouldn't put a synthetic in there because the synthetic would last to 8 or 10,000 miles. And in reality, that would be 3 years.
Right.
We don't think it's in their best interest not to have somebody check their tires and their fluids and their belts and the hoses for 3 years.
Right.
So we put them in a conventional. We make a lot less money on a conventional oil change.
Right.
But we're doing what's best for them. And many other shops do the same thing.
Sure, and a conventional oil, we always put it in, or we usually put it in if it's leaking oil.
And
an older vehicle that's leaking, yeah.
Right, and we'll change the viscosity.
Right.
So we'll put a 1030 in something that's in good shape.
Right.
But if it's a leaker, we'll put in a straight 30 weight or maybe a 1040 or even a 2050. So
right.
we'll modify the oil viscosity or the weight of the oil based on the car and its ability. If we have somebody in a 7,500 mile a year range, then we put them in a blended oil, again, once a year oil change.
Yeah.
That just takes a lot of load off of you, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Roger, good morning. How can we help you this morning?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. I'm excuse me, I'm going to give you a scenario.
Okay.
It's July or August, 110 degrees. I'm on my way up to the mountains, and I'm stuck in an accident somewhere on 17, and it's 110 degrees out. And so I want to keep my air conditioning on because, you know, Lord knows you don't want to sit there with your windows down going, oh, this is hot. So my question is it, as I'm sitting there with the vehicle running, is it better lubrication to have my gear shift in neutral or park? Which one is lubricating my transmission more?
No, they're both the same.
Oh, they're both the same. So I'm getting enough lubrication in that transmission.
Yeah, that really and truly, you should take this thought process off the table because it's not going to make any difference. You see, when you're in drive, then we're sending fluid through a different passageway, but the fluid pressure hasn't changed, and we're not forcing the fluid through this transmission because the pump runs on the engine RPM. So if you're sitting there idling at 600 RPM, then so is the converter, so is the pump. So it really is not going to make any difference. There's no way you can overheat that transmission fluid sitting there in drive, even if you stood there for an hour. I think it's better for you to throw it into park. I think it's better if you're going to do anything is bring the idle slightly up for the air conditioning. I think you should be well aware of the difference between normal and max AC so that you can keep the car comfortable and expect that the gauge may very well on the engine temperature go up to about 3/4, which doesn't bother me at all. The gauge on every car should be, or the needle should be between 1/2 and 3/4. But as far as the transmission is concerned, there is no difference between park and drive if you're sitting there idling.
Okay, no, he said park and neutral.
Oil thing. I use full synthetic. I have a Toyota Tundra 2006.
Okay.
Per the information that you give endlessly about oil changes, which is a good thing because people don't understand that, I change my full synthetic, and I drive about 8,000 miles a year, maybe 10 at the most. Is 6,000 miles a good change, or can I go a little further than that?
No, if you're 8 to 10, you can go the whole year. Mm-hmm. I want you to change the oil at the beginning of summer because that's the season that, you know, is the worst. So I want you to go through the summertime after we've checked your belts and your hoses and aired up your tires and checked all your fluids and all that kind of stuff that we do. It's just a matter of maximizing when you do the oil change and then when you do the change. If you're in synthetic and you're 8 to 10 a year, I think you're throwing money away by changing it to 6,000 because that's too early. You're draining oil that really is got life left.
Well, I don't have a gauge that tells me that, but when I drain that oil at 6,000 miles, it's pretty dark.
Well, yeah, but I got to tell you a funny story. I'm working on a legal case right now involving an insurance company, okay? And during this thing, the allegation is that the oil after 8,900 miles on an oil change, the oil had a golden hue. After 8,900 miles, okay?
That's pretty good color. I mean, I wish that it looked like that when I drained.
All right, wait a minute. There's the end of the story. So we decided, first of all, I wouldn't believe in all my life that an oil is going to have a golden hue after 8,900 miles or 7,900 miles or 6,900 miles or, for that matter, 2,900 miles. So I instructed my staff, in every single oil change you do, if you can document the oil change before, here's some baby food jars. Here's a couple hundred baby food jars. I want them to fill the baby food jar up, and I want them to write down how many miles this oil went. How many miles this oil went. And I said, and I want them all to do it. 14 guys working on cars.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up with 100 baby food jars.
Right.
Every single one of them did not have a golden hue. We went from, I think we had brand new oil in one baby food
right.
jar. Because we did this for a demonstration mm-hmm. for a judge.
Yeah.
So here's your golden hue.
Right.
There was cars with 800, 1,000 miles on the oil. And it didn't
still
have a golden hue.
Yeah, it was still dark.
It was still dark. The oil is supposed to, it captures the dirt, and that's what we call detergent, but it's not really a scrubbing bubbles detergent. We capture
Two
the
minutes.
Dirt, it holds it in suspension till the next time it goes through the filter. The color of oil means nothing in a gas or a diesel engine. You cannot taste it, you can't wipe it on a piece of glass, you cannot come to any kind of determination whether or not it's got amber, and it's not going to have amber. So for your truck or your Toyota, I would not be concerned with the. Now, if you smell it and it's got gasoline in it, which is going to be really obvious, that's a problem. And if it's white and foamy and it's got coolant in it, or if it's green and foamy or orange and foamy, but the color of oil has nothing to do with what's going on.
So that carbon, the darkness has nothing to do with the amount of carbon that's been put into that oil?
Well, yeah, but carbon is a solid. And it's going to come out at the filter.
No.
There's a lot of other things that are more corrosive. There's an acid that's created if you don't heat the oil up. So if you drive to the liquor store and back, you know, every month one time, and that's all you ever drive your car, then there's a problem there. So there's acids that build up, and there's water that builds up. But we have a situation that we can contain that. Most of the oils can counteract the acid. The water we can't do anything about. But no,
well,
really and truly.
If you drive from the liquor store and back once a day, 6 miles, and that's all you do, you got more problems than that. I mean, you got,
that's right.
You haven't dried up anything in the exhaust.
You wouldn't care about your oil.
Okay,
exactly.
You two.
You got to dry out the exhaust.
All right, you two. That's it. That's it. I'm not going to have. I'm not going to throw this stuff out there and have you two guys make fun of me. But okay, I understand your point, and you're exactly right. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you have a car question, or if you want me to solve an argument between you and your wife, just call me Dr. Phil.
Yeah, right.
And I'm, or Monty Hall, if those of these that are older than I am. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let's see, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my co-pilot, Renee, my wife, who's been in the car repair business as long as I, almost as long as I have.
Yeah.
I've got 44 years, no. Yeah, pretty much, because we got married about the same time that I was working at the Ken's Broadway show.
Yeah.
So it goes back a long time. Nevertheless, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, full-service, family-owned operation. So if you live in Deer Valley or North Phoenix, Tom's been around since 1983. I've known Tom since 1979. He's a good guy. He's honest. He's dependable. He has good quality technicians. He has excellent customer service. He's been around a long time, and you don't need to worry about him going out of business day after you do $2,000 worth of engine work. You don't have to worry about that. So he has ASE Master Technicians, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, Action Auto Repair. Real quick.
Okay.
You guys, on the break, you and Gil were talking about Jerry Springer, because we have a caller named Jerry Springer.
We have a caller named Jerry.
Jerry, that's right. And the idea is this. I have watched Jerry Springer. Do you know why?
Yeah, makes you feel good that your kids aren't on there.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. My kids are not on that show, and I'm real grateful for that. And neither am I, neither am you.
I think it'd be more likely you'd be on that show, but whatever.
No. All right, and speaking of Jerry, let's go to Jerry. Jerry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
David is first.
Oh, David. I got to go to David because he's first. I'm sorry, Gil. David, you're up first. Jerry, you stay there.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I got a question on the mission station.
Okay.
Well, I've done some stuff. I have a 79 Jeep truck.
Okay.
I put a small block Chevy in it a couple of years ago, and then I changed my mind. I put in an LS 6.0 in it.
Okay.
Now the mission stations want me to put in a front oxygen sensor, a back oxygen sensor, a purge system, and all kinds of other stuff. I'm like, what are you guys talking about?
Well, the rules change down. In my opinion, the rules change there on a regular basis. That car, that motor that you put in there, that LS 6-liter, came with all that stuff. Catalytic converter, O2 sensors, computers, throttle position sensor, all that kind of stuff. I think you can appeal that, but here's the real question. How dirty is it coming out of the tailpipe right now? Do you even come close to 79 Jeep standards?
Oh, no, I'm running zeros across the board.
Okay. And how are you pulling that off?
I've never seen zeros.
Yeah.
Well, my COs is like 0.05, and my HCs is a point, or like 31, I think it is.
Okay. Well, that is what I call wrap your lips around the tailpipe, and you're not going to die because what's coming out of that tailpipe. But do you have catalytic converters already?
Yeah, I got the front oxygen sensor and the catalytic converters, yeah.
Okay, so what if you have those? Do you have a check engine light in the Jeep?
Yeah,
Okay. Well, you need to appeal. I can't answer your question. I don't know the answer to your question. If you're blowing those kinds of tailpipe readings, you know, and you have a check engine light on your truck, and there's nothing in the monitors that says it hasn't been reset, then I don't understand why that they would make you an example. But there is an appeal process, and I think you should go through that. Alrighty. Well, good luck to you. Those are really good emissions,
numbers.
I mean, that's what a 2016, 17, 18 car would have, where you're just blowing zeros almost. So, well, that's a great deal, David. Steven, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2004 Saturn View that I've babied quite well. I used to live on board a ship that literally had an oil fire every day, so I understand the importance of keeping things clean.
Uh-huh.
Recently went to the former Saturn dealer to get a quick oil change, and immediately after that, every time I start my engine, after the instrument cluster lamp test, the check engine light comes on for about 40 seconds and goes out. I've checked to make sure that the oil filler cover on the, you know, the valve cover is tight and in place. The gas cap is tight and in place, and I'm kind of at a loss. Why is this nut suddenly doing this after, you know, 14 years of no problems?
Well, the answer to your question is too early. Your question is too early. We got to find out what's going on, and then we can answer the question.
I did put an OBD scanner on, and there are no codes pending.
Okay. Well, the only other thing I would look at is serial stream data. Otherwise, let's go in history and see what's available on an 04. I'd also want to go and see if any of the monitors have been reset. But I don't know that I've ever worked on what you're talking about. Oftentimes the check engine light will come on and off on the older cars depending on a cylinder misfire. So I don't know if that's applicable to your 04 because it's 14 years old and my hard drive doesn't, you know, keep that stuff on there forever. But I think the next level on your OBD, and you said OBD scanner, but I'm sure you just looked at the codes. Because if you had an OBD scanner, you couldn't read it anyway. So it gives you everything in numbers, and so you have to know if a mass airflow sensor, it should be an 8 number or an 80 number or an 8,000 number. You have to know all of that. So you're checking.
I do have the code books, but there were no codes at all showing.
Okay, but codes again don't tell you much. It just tells you what state the problem's in Arkansas. So no codes is fine, but behind the scenes there may be serial stream data, there may be some historical data, and then we're looking at the monitors to reset. If a system goes down and comes back up, the computer's not going to like that. So we go in and say, hey, are all your monitors reset as we look at each one? Well, one of them on the catalyst is not reset. So then we start looking at why isn't the catalyst coming warm? Why is it taking so long? Or in a misfire. But I can't fix your problem. I can't even tell you what it is. But your question, chasing your question is a bad idea. Let's chase the light. And once we get to the light, we'll know if it had anything to do with the oil change or not. And you could go back to them and say, hey, I'd like you to look at this because it appears you gave me something I didn't have before. I will tell you this much. Not too long ago, one of my guys, we have guns that we pump 5 quarts of oil in your car in 11 seconds. I hate it that we're going to waste all that oil by trying to drain those quart cans, and then we have to get rid of the plastic, we have to get rid of the cardboard, we have to do all that. So I've set my shop up for an environmental position of just we squirt. One of the guys squirted the oil so fast in the car that he flooded the entire PCV valve system, flooded the air filter, flooded the engine with oil. It took us forever to get that thing back to normal. We admitted it, but we now all know that you can't just run those guns wide open and stick 5 quarts of oil in 10 or 12 seconds in a car. Some of the cars don't have a return big enough. Now, you could be one of those, and it would be easy to tell because you'd find carbon in a couple of the cylinders, and the spark plugs would show misfire, and the spark plugs would show oil consumption. That doesn't mean they hurt your motor. That means we just need to clean it up a little bit better. That's the best I got for you, Stephen. Good luck to you. Ron and Jerry, you stay right there because you're number one and number two on the other side of this break, and we'll be back in a minute. All righty. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're running a little bit behind, so I'm going to go to the callers real quick. We have Ron and Jerry and Tom, and we're not going to switch Jerry and Tom and Tom and Jerry because that's not fair. But, Ron, you've been waiting first and Jerry second, but I'm all ears.
Yeah, Mark, I got a towing question. I have a 28-foot motorhome, and I'd like to tow a 2000 Silverado four-wheel drive. Is that possible?
How much does the truck weigh? Do you have any idea?
I don't know.
Okay. I can tell you that I can tell you for sure that most motorhomes only have a 5,000-pound towing capability. I'll tell you a rule of thumb, but don't hold me. This isn't apply in everybody's case. But first of all, the weight on the hitch will be stamped somewhere on the hitch. But most of the time, a 5,000-pound hitch will have two bolts on either side that bolt it to the frame. Most of the time, a 10,000-pound hitch, or the hitch itself, the receiver part of it, it'll be much bigger, and it'll have three bolts on each side. So you have okay. to, you can't tow anything. That, now, on the side of the sticker on the door, it'll say gross vehicle weight rating, GVWR. It'll be on the sticker.
Yes.
And find that sticker and then go from there. A 28-foot, what chassis you got underneath it?
It's a Ford chassis.
Oh, you couldn't even pull a Volkswagen motor behind that thing. I'm just teasing you. Thank you for laughing. Thank you for laughing. Thank you for laughing. I'm just teasing you. No, if you've got the four, you probably got the F53 chassis. Is it got the what year is it?
2015.
Okay. I don't think you're going to have the F53 chassis on, but you could. What motor you got in there? Is the V10?
I believe it's a V10.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I think that'll pull it. The only question is does your four-wheel drive Silverado exceed the thing for the hitch? And please let me tell you, if it does, you need to go to Plan B. Okay? I work those cases for insurance companies. So you're driving down the road, that truck comes loose, kills a bunch of people, and we find out that truck weighs 6,500 pounds and you're only supposed to have 5,000 pounds. Your insurance company is just going to go crazy because they know that that just doubled the claim, or I'm being facetious, but they know that you're in bigger trouble than you were if it had been 4,800 pound truck. So yeah. Just don't skate there when the risk and the risk is huge. The reward is nothing. Okay.
Okay. Here's the other question I had is it's an automatic. Will I have to take the drive lines out of it or?
Well, is it a part? Is it a
four-wheel drive?
Is it part-time four-wheel? You got hubs in the front?
No.
Okay. So it's going to be all-wheel drive. Yeah, you might have to put a slip lock. You might have to put a slip collar. You got to disable the transmission somehow. And in your owner's manual or on the website, you'll be able to answer that. Can this vehicle be towed four down? And there may very well be a way that you can put the transfer case in neutral and this vehicle can be towed four down. But there also might be a caveat that says, you know, every 200 miles, we want you to start it up and run it through the gears. But I think the shifter is going to be in neutral, so the steering wheel will go left and right. And I think the transfer case might be your way out on that Silverado. Okay?
All right.
Thank you very much, Ron. I want to admit to everybody that David and Steven stumped me today. David had a 79 Jeep with a brand new 6-liter up-to-date Microsoft 10 motor, and he's passing emissions, but he doesn't understand why they want him to do a bunch more work, and I don't either. Steven had a view, and he had an oil change, and now he's got an intermittent check engine light right after he starts it that goes away. I can tell both of you this, that there's guys out there. There's a lot of guys out there that can diagnose this view with no problem. I think your diagnostic charge is $75 to about $125. As far as the emissions thing, I think I gave him the best advice. Just go appeal that. Jerry, thank you for holding. How can I help you today?
This is a follow-up on an oil consumption question.
Okay.
I was using a bunch of oil. I called you on that. So what I did was we had the shop recommended that I change the PCV valve.
Okay.
Changed the PCV valve, my oil consumption went away. And I was getting about 1,300 miles per quart of oil. But in the last 3 or 4 months, that's dropped down to now about 600 miles per quart of oil.
Okay.
So where do I go from here?
Wait a minute. Before the PCV valve worked, it was getting 1,300 miles on a quart of oil. And now you've...
No.
Okay, the other way around.
I was getting bad consumption, so the shop, I was, you know, the same consumption I was getting now, basically. And then the shop said, let's try and change the PCV valve, and that changed it. Then my oil consumption, I mean, it was taking 1,300 miles to use a quart, but now it's, again, dropped back down to where it's about 500 or 600 miles per quart.
All right. And if I ask you, is it leaking, Jerry? Do you see anything on the ground in your garage or on your driveway? Is it leaking?
No, it's bone dry. I mean, I looked underneath the valve covers, the oil pan, everything. It's bone dry in that.
Okay, fair enough. The next thing to do is pull the spark plugs and pull them all and keep them in order, and you're going to see the cylinder that's consuming the oil because it's not leaking, so it's got to be consuming it and send it out the tailpipe. And so you're going to find one cylinder, then you're going to do a wet and dry compression test on that one cylinder, plus the one to the left and the one to the right. So you want to do three, because that gives you the best comparison. And at that point, you can decide what the heck's going on. Now, the only other thing it could be is that the intake gasket could be bad, and it's sucking out oil out of the valley underneath the intake. And that's something we see once a year. And that will typically spend oil to a couple of cylinders, yet the compression will be fine and there'll be no leak down. And then we know that we're sucking oil out of underneath the intake where we shouldn't. And that's where you start pressurizing the engine. And if we pressurize the engine and we got air coming out of one or two or three cylinders, then bingo, we know what we're doing at that point. So that's, but I think the spark plugs, pulling them out and looking at them and comparing them, I think you'll find the cylinder that's causing the problem, and then there is test procedures after that. Okay?
Okay. One question.
Sure.
Now, would that compression test determine if it's the valve or if it's the rings? Because from what I understand, the 4.7 motors have issues with its valve guide.
Okay, and it could be the valve guide. You're absolutely right. It could be the valve guide. And in that particular case, we'd probably pull the exhaust or the intake or drop a camera down inside there and look at the back side of the valve. Now, if it's a valve, then I think we ought to pull that valve spring off that valve on the intake side of the affected cylinder, and I think we ought to put a new seal on it and then just put it back together and see what happens at that point. Sometimes there's an O-ring on top of that valve, but sometimes there's an umbrella seal that works better. So the answer to your question is we'll have an answer. Our industry will have an answer. What part of town do you live in?
I'm up by Kurtz, and that's who I use.
There'll be no problem. Those two young bucks up there, Jeff and Eric, they know exactly what I'm talking about, and they're good. And you just tell them what's step one, and okay the step one, and say, call me when you get the results, and we'll decide what we're going to do after that.
Okay.
All righty.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right.
Thank you for holding as long as you did. Okay, and then I want to tell you also that I made a mistake last week, and there was a lady named Lynn, and if she calls me again and bugs me about mistakes I make, I'm going to give you her cell phone number and tell you that she's a great person just to talk to, but she likes to talk for at least 30 minutes. So your responsibility would be take up her time. But last week, I talked about going to some of the discount places to look at tires or something like that. I don't remember what it was. And I use the word price club, which my family just gripes me all the time. I know it's Costco, but I was just born and it was price club back then. So I'm sorry I messed up. Lynn, I'm sorry, but I have your cell phone number and I'm just letting you know that if you hurt my feelings again, I'm going to hand out your cell phone and tell people to call you and that you're lonesome and that they're going to want to talk to you for 30 minutes or 35 minutes. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you, Tom?
Good morning. Thanks, Mark. A question about my car having hard starts. I checked the fuel pressure and the regulator, and it's okay, but 80% of the time it has a hard start, and if I step on the accelerator a little bit, it gets us to start. So what do you think that could be?
What kind of car is it?
It's a Pontiac Bonneville 2003. It's got a 3.8-liter engine.
Okay. You know, you're not going to start because of oil or spark. And I don't – your throttle doesn't make any difference. I mean, you can – the only difference it makes is if you push it all the way to the floor, it's going to go into what we call clear flood mode, because – that the computer says, oh, he's got his foot all the way to the floor. Oh, he's trying to clear a flooded vehicle, so I'm going to trim down the fuel. I'm going to shut the faucet off just a little bit. So I know that that programming and logic is in your Bonneville. But to be perfectly honest with you, this is the third time I've been stumped in this show, because it's always going to be spark or fuel. And so if you've got good fuel pressure, and you're, is it 35, 45 pounds, I'm guessing?
It was like 44.
Okay. All right. And does it, and when you shut the key off and let it sit overnight and leave the gauge on there, when you turn the key back on in the morning, it pops to 44 immediately?
I didn't do that. I left it on for like 10 minutes. It didn't bleed down.
Okay. All right. Well, that is a consideration. We let it, is it only a hard start in first thing in the morning after it's been sitting a while, or is it a hard start when you stop at the grocery store and you come back out a half an hour later?
More sitting. But I haven't paid attention. Okay. I think it even happens when it's warm out, but it's been sitting.
All right. Well, if it sounds like you have above average, skills in the car repair stuff. I would want you, forget the throttle stuff. Let's work on something else. Pull the spark plug wire if you think it's going to be a hard start. Pull it, stick the spark plug in there, stand outside, put the parking brake on, put it in park, reach your hand in, crank it over. You can hear the snap, snap, snap.
2 minutes.
And yeah. if you get it close to the windshield wiper area, you can probably see it snap, snap, snap. So you carry an old spark plug with you, and you just pop the boot off generally, put it in there. But the question is, now, we could still have fuel pressure and have lost a cam or a crank sensor, and the computer doesn't know when to give you spark, and it certainly doesn't know when to fire the injectors. So we could have a cam or crank, but usually those set a code, usually.
No codes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm spark or fuel. I think we need to hang our head on spark and fuel, and I would like to see you leave that gauge on all night long. And did you pull the vacuum line on the fuel pressure regulator?
Yeah, and it went up a little bit, then it came down.
Okay, but I'm more interested in...
It went up a little bit.
Okay, I don't want any wetness inside that hose. Any wetness?
Yeah, I didn't smell anything, and there was no liquid. I could see.
All right, and obviously, if you pull the vacuum on it, then it should come up a couple of pounds, so we're okay there. But I don't know. I think we need to look at the spark side and see if we've got that, because I think the fact that you hit the throttle and it helps it to start, I think it's more of an extended crank. I think it's, you've been cranking on it 8 or 10 seconds, and you hit the throttle and it fires up. I think that might be related, but I don't want to hang my hat on the extended that I'm touching the throttle and it starts, because I'll be able to explain that after I figure out why it won't start. And you might even try some ether, spray some ether in there, and if it hits bangs every time, then that suggests fuel, because we're banging it with spark. So there's those kinds of tests you need to worry about. I got to go, though, but thank you very much. Hector, please stay here, because I'll be back in a few minutes and over the top of the hour. So take a break for about three and a half minutes. And when we get back, I'm going to take you first. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We got four open lines. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for the next hour. I'm going to go to Hector because he waited all through the break. And Hector, you're up. It's time for you to swing the bat. What's up?
Yes, how you doing?
Good.
I have an 01 Nissan Sentra where if it sits overnight or sits while I'm at work, as if I start it right away and put it straight into drive, it'll stutter. After a while, it'll go back to normal. But if I leave it in the idling for about 20, 30 seconds, it drives just fine. Now, I did clean the mass flow airflow sensor. Other than that, that's all I've done to try to fix this problem.
When you cleaned the mass airflow sensor, it didn't get worse or better. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct.
Okay, good. That's good, because I was looking for it got worse, and I was going to slap your hand and say, ugh. You got to be real careful when you're cleaning those mass airflow sensors, because the learning curve is expensive. In your particular case, I think you should clean the throttle blades. I think you should clean the throttle blades, because here's what's happening. When you start the car up, the computer's controlling the idle, and it's opening and closing what we call the idle air control motor. So if we want the RPMs to go up, we open the motor a click or two, and if we want the idle to go down, we close the motor a click or two, and it's just shutting off an air passage. In your particular case, you're letting it sit there and idle. That idle air control motor's a little bit behind. So if you let it idle for the count of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then you're letting that idle control air control motor finally do its job. When you throw it into gear right away, the idle air control motor's probably carboned up. Probably that passageway is dirty. Probably the throttle blades are dirty. And I think you have about an 75 to 80% chance if you'll clean the throttle blades and then don't make any adjustments to the idle air control motor. Just clean up the nozzle or the cone on the end of the idle air control motor and be very careful when you pull it out. Put it back in and don't change anything. And just make sure that passage, because all we're doing is introducing air into the engine to raise or lower the idle. Okay?
Oh, all right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Heather. And let me just get some business done real quick here, and then we're going to go to the phones again. Sun City has one of the largest and most trusted source for complete auto repair services, and the name of it is Auto Dynamics. It's been family-owned and operated since 1982, and I've known Chuck since probably 68 and 70. So I know him and his son, Derek, understand high quality and service. They stand behind their work. They have great staff, great technicians. And Chuck's kind of old-fashioned. He doesn't pay a commission or a percentage of your repair bill to his staff, so therefore they never sell unnecessary parts and repairs because there's no benefit to them. So if you're looking for a great shop in the Sun City area, I'd like to recommend Automotive Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Back to the phones. Marty, you're up. How are you?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you. Bruce Kane told me that you could help me.
Oh, that just cost you $100, but go ahead.
Well, but he says that you know everything about cars, and you've got 3 strikes today, so maybe I should ask for a next.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
I know.
No, Bruce Kane is a really good friend of mine, and he's an old cowboy, and he's from Louisiana, and he can cook better than any man or woman I know. So,
and I've been able to have a couple of good meals with Bruce. So here's what I have, 2008 Chevy HHR.
Okay.
2.4 liter motor in it. I have the air pressure sensor gauge on my dash.
Okay.
And it, when a tire would go down, it wasn't matching the tire. It would say the left front is low when it was really the left rear. But anyways, it's now come back where it doesn't work at all, and I got the little dash light on. It's showing that the tires are low.
Okay.
So what would be my next step here?
Well, this is really kind of easy. We have technology that we didn't even have when you first got your TPMS, tire pressure monitoring system. But we can now walk around the car, and we can talk to this tire pressure monitoring system, and we can see if the battery's up or down. And then, in a simplistic way, because there's 30 different ways this happened, but I'm going to give you a simplistic way. We got a red, white, blue, and black tire. Okay, so the computer has to know that when you rotate them, you have to tell the computer where the tire went. So if the black was on the left front, and we rotated the tires and we put it on the left rear, then it still thinks the black is on the right front. So in that case, if the black says, hey, I'm a little low on air, it's going to say, hey, you're right front. But really, the tire's been moved on the rotation. So that's what needs to happen first is, now, if I know this is something that us guys do on a regular basis, but I am pretty sure there is a procedure in your owner's manual to tell the computer where everything's at. And so sometimes what they'll do is, and this is kind of an arduous thing, it's much quicker if you have a handheld device that costs $4,000, but you can go in there and says, let the air out of the right front tire. Okay, I see it. Let the air out of the driver's side tire. Okay, I see it. You can do that. Sometimes you honk the horn, you wave a dead chicken around your head, you open and slam the door. I mean, some of the procedures are just silly. But there's a lot of guys. What part of town are you in?
Actually, I was going to bring it to your shop.
Okay.
Well, I live in Tempe.
All right. Go to Alan. Alan has the magic wand. My son has a magic wand for this kind of tire pressure monitoring system. Now, what year is that HHR?
2008.
Okay. Probably a battery because it's 10 years old. So one of the TPMS may have a bad battery. We either replace the sensor or replace the battery. Alan can explain all that to you. But the answer is,
okay,
is
cool.
On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2 or 3. It's not that big of a deal. But so, because you mentioned Bruce Kane, the bill's going to be at least $250. I just thought I'd say that.
Yeah, I got the deal. Hey, I have one more question if I could, please.
Okay, go ahead.
This is just a random occurrence. When I go to start the car, nothing happens. All the dash lights come on. Nothing happens. I try it a couple times. Nothing. If I get out of the car and move the car forward and back and get back in, it starts right up.
Okay. I want you to go to MarkSalem.com and print out FAQ 28.
FAQ 28? Okay.
I want to know what the headlights are doing when this all happens. Real quick, this is the deal. You need to park it where you can watch the headlights on the wall in front of you. So just get, or in the garage. So you turn on the headlights and they're white and bright. Good. That's step one. You hit the key and they don't change at all. You hit the key 3, 4, 5 times. Nothing changes. The solenoid's bad. Okay. You hit the key. The lights go completely out and come back on slowly. You have a bad connection at the battery. The lights go completely out, but as soon as you let go of the key, they come, boom, right back on. The starter's bad. So you can diagnose the car by looking at the headlights, and it'll tell you starter, solenoid, bad connection at the battery, or a bad battery. In your case, because here's the word I heard you say, no noise, nothing happens. So do you know where the starter's at on that HHR?
I have no idea.
Okay, follow the positive battery cable to the starter. You take a hammer, and this is not something you're going to do in your Sunday best, but you hit the key, nothing happens. You get out. You already know where the starter's at. You just get down on one knee. You slap that starter on the side, not the solenoid that sits on top of it, but the starter.
Right.
Slap that thing kind of hard, get back in. I bet it starts right up. But how many miles are on the HHR?
171,000.
Have you ever had a starter or solenoid?
No.
Okay. I would suggest that you do both. Even though the solenoid's bad and the starter always works when the solenoid tells it to, I think for the labor and the cost and the miles you have on there, I think you are best served to get a good quality starter solenoid package and put both of them in if I'm right and it turns out to be the solenoid. So just let's put both of them in. Let's not mess around. Okay.
Okay, sounds good.
All right,
You've been redeemed, Mark. Thanks.
All righty, thank you. Jack, you're up next. If you drop the name of one of my friends again, it's going to cost you money. I just want to tell you that. Jack?
Hey there, Mark.
Yes,
sir. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I've got a couple of inspection questions for you.
Okay. So
the first one is, I've got a 2014 Dodge Grand Caravan.
Okay.
And I got a Mopar extended warranty when I purchased it.
Okay.
And I've got probably it's 55,000 now. The warranty goes to 60,000 in 5 years. So I'm wondering, is it a good idea for a shop like yours or one of your associated shops to do a full inspection of the vehicle, do diagnosis and make sure that there's nothing hiding out there that could be still covered by that extended warranty?
Yes, but not in the fashion that you think. I think that job is twofold. You have 50% of the responsibility to watch the gauges, watch the lights, watch the check engine light, watch the TPMS light, watch the generator and the alternator, I should say. Your job's there. But your oil change guy should be the other part of that. So I think if you go, what you're asking me is should I do a used car checkover? That's what you're looking at. Well, most shops, that's going to be $100. I suggest that you just make sure that they know you have an aftermarket warranty, and I suggest that you make sure that they understand that if they see anything at all that needs to be serviced, any problem, any leak, any bad bushing, but you're going to know a bad bushing because it's going to clunk when you stop and it's going to clunk when you take off. On aftermarket warranties, I'm dead against those. I mean, I hate those because not too long ago, is another stupid example. A lady had a water pump go bad, and they wouldn't pay for the water pump because she hadn't had a transmission service done at the right time. So the obvious question is what the hell does one have to do with the other? And they said, well, the cooling system has the radiator lines in it. And so we're cooling off the transmission lines, and the transmission, because it hasn't been serviced, could have caused an extreme heat problem in the cooling system, which wiped out the water pump. And I said, the water pump's leaking. It's leaking. It's got 80,000 miles on it. It has nothing to do with the well, she didn't do her transmission service at 60 when she should have, so we're not going to pay for the water pump. That's what my life is. Those people rip you off every time. They don't pay sales tax. They don't pay Freon. Boy, my pants wadded up. Can you tell that? And they cheat you, and they want me to buy an inferior part, or they send me some part in a box that the manufacturer isn't even proud of, and they want me to warranty the labor and the part, even though I never made a dime on the part. This is the mentality that these idiots have. So from future, for all the rest of you, when you want to buy an aftermarket warranty, you knock yourself out. It's your money. It's your thing. But I want to tell you something. The fight just starts when you have your very first complaint. So have I answered all your questions, Jack? Forgive
me. Why I was asking about doing it as an independent is because, see, I'm keeping all of my service with Dodge dealer.
Okay.
And, you know, basically, good guys treated me fair. There was a situation where the electric fan on the radiator was shot, and they replaced it, no problem.
Okay.
Bad an eye. But here's where I'm at. I always like to have an independent view versus taking a Dodge vehicle to a Dodge company with a Mopar warranty, extended warranty process, and just to have that other set of eyes to, you know, go through it.
Okay. I have a comment about that. I think you're wrong. I think that the dealerships are hungry for work because the newer model cars don't even have a maintenance schedule one-fifth of what we had before. Otherwise, there's cars out there that don't even have their first major service till 75, 80,000 miles. So that's a real problem because now the cars are being made so well that we're starving because the maintenance intervals on half this stuff isn't. So I think at the dealership, in that environment, especially if they have your warranty, those technicians are tuned into your car, and the smallest oil leak is going to be identified quickly, and it's going to be repaired quickly because somebody gets paid for that. And you're dealing with the people that are the eyes and the ears of the aftermarket warranty. I think you're going to compound the issue when you walk into the dealership and say, the independent shop, Salem Boys Auto, said that I need this. The very first thing that happens in Mark Salem's opinion, and there's lots of good Dodge and Chrysler, Plymouth, and Fiat dealerships out there. But the hackles in their back are going to get up, and they're going to go, oh, yeah, those independent guys don't know nothing. So I think that's a backward step for you. I think I would just impress upon them, put a note on the rearview mirror, dear technicians, please give this car a good, thorough look over because my Mopar extended warranty is likely to go out in the next 12 months or 18 months or whatever the action is. That's going to really prod him to look. And I think you'll see an increase in those kinds of repairs, and I don't know if that's a bad idea. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
So now my second inspection question is, my son's going to get his first vehicle. Probably going to be a pickup because he's studying to be an electrician.
Okay.
And so wondering about who does a good used vehicle full inspection in my area, and I'm roughly at 67th Avenue and Bell Road.
How about 88th Avenue and Thunderbird? Thunderbird,
yeah,
Auto.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's Thunderbird Auto.
Yeah, just tell, when you walk in there, just announce as loud as you can that you're here against your better judgment because you heard Mark Salem say something about, you know, Thunderbird Auto and Tom, and he doesn't know, he couldn't fix a car if you spotted him the windshield wipers and stuff like that. And they'll all laugh because, and I don't get any bird dog fee. All I'm doing is I'm teasing Tom through you. And I'm also subtly letting him know that I referred you to him, not that he's going to pay me anything. It's just, it's a nice thing for you to have in your corner. So what you're looking for is a used car checkover on anything you're going to buy for your son and ask him in advance how much that is. I think you're going to find it's going to be between $75 and $125. Now, most of the time, we're going to give you something to negotiate with. Not too long ago, a lady came in. And we had a car, she was going to buy it from a used car dealer, and we wrote it up for $900. And she went back and they did all the work. So she saved, it cost her $125 and she saved $900. And she was ecstatic and so was I. But a lot of people say, well, they had a $1,000 pack and they gave you away funny money. I don't care. They fixed all the things we found wrong with the car for free and she still bought it. I'm okay with that. So that's my answer. Yeah. All righty.
Sounds good.
All right.
Can I ask you one last quick question?
Yep.
And that is, this is the tire question. So for that Grand Caravan, I'm using it now to run back and forth to L.A. I'm doing work on apartments and so forth, so I'm hauling furniture and various other stuff. I've got the little donut spare, which I don't want to waste that, my life on.
Okay.
So I'd like to get a full-size spare, and I've talked to a few folks. I said, well, just go to the junkyard and get a wheel and put a tire on it and go. But I'm just wondering, well, you know a good junkyard, or is it better to go to somebody like S&S and say, hey, give me a good, you know, basic wheel for the vehicle and throw in a tire?
When was the last time you had a flat?
Well, I had one last year, but I was here in Arizona versus running across the desert.
All right. So how many flat tires have you had in the last 5 years?
Maybe about three. And it's always roofing nails.
That was my next question, because you're in construction. How many of them are directly related to the environment you're driving this vehicle in?
That's it.
Okay. I don't think that's a good idea. It's okay to get a factory wheel, and I would go to American Auto Wrecking over in the East Valley. American Auto something or other, 961, I don't remember. It's on Baseline Road just east of Country Club on the south side of the road, and it might have a Gilbert address. American some, you can tell them what kind of car you have, and they'll have a tire and a wheel. But it's going to take up a lot more room. And I want to tell you something, as long as the inflation on those donuts is fine, I've driven those donuts hundreds of miles, and the maximum speed's written right on the side of it, so it says 55 or 60 miles an hour. If you stay underneath those numbers, those donuts just work fine. And they'll get you to where you're going to go. But in reality, it's going to take up a lot of trunk room. It's not going to fit in the well or the place you're at, and you're going to lose some space. So I still keep the donuts in all my rental cars, and I keep the donuts in my wife's car and my daughter's car, because it's just too much aggravation. And in reality, if it weren't for you being on a construction site, you probably had one flat unrelated to your job in the last 5 years, and the risk and the reward is off balance, in my opinion. All righty.
Cool.
Okay,
hey, Jack. Thanks so much for your help.
You bet. And Neil and Larry, stay right there, because we're going to be back in about 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 25 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you real quick about a Mesa shop that's a really good shop. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around since 1970. I think they're on their second or third generations of Thompson's. Brian and Thelma run Thompson's Auto Repair. You won't find a nicer couple. They are truly, truly good people. They're on Stapley just east of Main. Actually, the other way around. They're on Main Street, just east of Stapley. They've been around a long time. They have ASE-certified technicians. That's a big deal to me. And they have friendly reminders that let you know when your car might be due for service. So they're not telling you it is, because they don't really know how many miles you have on your car with those postcards. But they're saying, just pay attention to that kind of issue. So it's the only shop in Mesa that I can put my name behind and say I can recommend them. Others have applied, and they didn't make it, but there's a lot of good guys there that haven't applied, and that's okay with me too. So Thompson's is the only Mesa shop centrally located. He's just east of Stapley on the south side of Main Street. All righty, Neil, good morning, and thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I just purchased a 2018 Dodge Ram 2500 with the Cummins 6.7 engine.
Yes, sir.
The manual states, under no circumstance that oil change intervals exceed 15,000 miles or 6 months, whichever comes first. Now, I have a problem with this 6 month thing, because I frequently only drive maybe 15,000 to 2,000 miles in 6 months, especially during the winter. Am I going to jeopardize my warranty if I don't change oil every 6 months and only have like 2,000 miles on the oil?
You know, I've never heard, I believe you, but I've never heard of that before. But I agree with you. That is about as ridiculous can be. Now, you wouldn't necessarily be the normal diesel Dodge owner, because those guys are hauling big construction trailers, and those guys are hauling their toy boxes up to the mountains every weekend. So you are kind of different in that respect. And I think what the issue really is that they say 10,000 miles on the top end. They want you at 10 no matter what. Is that what you said?
No, it says under no circumstance should oil change intervals exceed 15,000.
Okay.
Or 6 months. And my last Dodge I had, it was 1 year.
Okay.
And I can't understand why they would, you know, shorten it to 6 months. And, of course, that thing holds like 12 quarts of oil.
Yes, yes. It's a $140 oil change.
Yeah,
I think
every 6 months, I just don't understand the logic.
Okay, I think what I would do is go back to the dealer that you bought it and ask to speak to the service manager and have this conversation with him. And then I think you should write down date, time, who I talked to, what he said, what the questions were. I'd walk in there with questions, but I think you have a good question. And he's the one that's going to be able to say to you, you know what, Neil, you and I will work this out. So instead of going 15,000 miles or 6 months, let's split the difference and just bring you in once a year or something like that. But when your invoice is going to have your mileage and it's going to have the time, and if you're doing only 2,000 or 3,000 miles a year, you're going to build up a little bit of water where you wouldn't normally, because you're not using it and you're not heating it up as you should. But I think you best have that conversation with him. If it were me, I would make friends with, you know, I would have an independent shop working on my car, and together we would work out the scenario that we would be best served. But I can't tell you that is ridiculous for it to be 15,000 on the left hand and then 6 months on the right hand. I just don't understand that. And you know something else you could do? You could call 1-800-Chrysler, 1-800-Dodge, and you could ask them to address this and tell you what you should do. And when you do that, just get the date and the time and the name of the person you talk to, and hopefully that will help you. But, Neil, you stumped me. I don't have an answer for you. I think that that's stupid, and I think that's a really bad idea. And I can't tell you what to do with respect to your warranty, but I frankly don't think it'll make any difference. Welcome back, everybody. You know, earlier in the show, we had somebody who said, I said to them, do you have a place that you go to, or what part of town do you live in? And he said, oh, I'm up at Kurtz. Let me tell you why Kurtz is kind of special. First of all, he's been around a really long time. He's been around since 1987. As most of my shops are not spring chickens, we all been around a little while. And the ones you need to be worried about are the guys that are going to be in business for 8 months, take a whole bunch of your money, and then go out of business and you don't have a warranty. You don't have to worry about that with Kurtz. Kurtz is at I-17 in Bell. He works on gas and diesel. He has master technicians galore. He's a master. Eric's a master. Jeff's a master. There's three guys that are masters, and they're all really good. And the two younger guys, Jeff and Eric, are really smart. We don't think, Kurt and I, that they're any smarter than us, and they're certainly not any more experienced than us, but you can decide for yourself. So if you don't have a repair shop and you live near I-17 in Bell, can I suggest that you try Kurtz Automotive, northeast corner, I-17 in Bell. Let's go to Larry. Larry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, Mark, this is a water temperature question.
Okay.
I have a 1990 Chevy small block 350. It's in a 32 street rod.
Okay.
Very basic installation. For the last 2 years, it's run consistently 180 degrees.
Okay.
And now when I start it and run it, the first 8 minutes, it pops up to 220, sits there for a few minutes, then pops down to 180. And I was wondering if it was a thermostat issue, or are there different temperature thermostats that I should be considering?
Well, I think you're making a big mistake. Let me tell you, in the old days, when your 32 was made, all the way up until probably 1996, we dealt with sludge in a big way. We would take engines apart, and you had to use a ladle to scoop the black sludge out of the oil pan and the intake manifold and the lifters and everywhere. Black sludge was a big deal. And I want to tell you something. We didn't see motors go 100,000 miles back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Rarely did they go 100K. In 1996, we decided that we needed to get that water temperature up because water boils at 212. It turns from a liquid to a vapor at 212. We realized that this sludge inside of an engine was water and oil. So we went up to a 195 thermostat to 220. Now, we're boiling the water out because the oil gets to 220. Well, that's well past 212 Fahrenheit where water turns to a vapor. The PCV valve sucks the vapor out, sends it out the tailpipe, and today we got motors that are doing 300,000 and 400,000 miles, and when we take them apart, they look brand new inside. So I don't care what your 32 coupe has otherwise. I think this thing ought to run at 220, and you're going to be a whole lot happier. Running it at 180, how are you going to get the water? Every time you shut that motor off, you're going to get a tablespoon or more of water as the air inside condenses. And so as it gets from hot to cold, you're going to end up with that. So now your fluctuation is going to be caused by a level problem or a thermostat problem. You're right. It's either going to be a little low on level. It could be down off the top of the radiator, maybe an inch or two or three. But other than that, it'll be a thermostat.
Okay, so 210, 220 is fine then.
Absolutely fine. You know what? If I was going to buy your car and you told me you ran it at 180, I would shake your hand and tell you I don't think I can afford your car and I'd walk away. I really would. I really would. I want you. I want to tell you something else. It's going to run better and it's going to develop more horsepower at 220 degrees. I promise you that.
Oh, that's great to know. Hey, thanks a lot. Hey, by the way, I emailed you this week on a starter problem, which you helped me tremendously. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that. And anybody else that wants to email me, it's easy. Mark, with a K, mark@marksalem.com. And if you give me your phone number, most of the time I'd rather just call you. And I call from a blocked phone number. I have to carry a blocked phone number. Otherwise, my phone number, I would answer car questions a million times. But anyway, thank you for your kind comments, Larry. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I got two questions for you.
Okay.
And let's see. Number one, I just had a car worked on. I have overheating problems, high speed with the AC on.
Okay.
I checked the coolant, and they look put straight coolant in it. So it's not a 50-50. When I check it with a little hydrometer, it's all the way up. That be causing some of my heating?
Absolutely. Your coolant has to have water in order to dissipate the heat. So, and you should be 41 degrees, somewhere around 40 degrees. And when you do it with a hydrometer, you should be around 40. Well, wait a minute. It's 50-50.
34, I can't remember what the magic number is.
That is. You're right. I was wrong. 50-50 is bringing to 34. And so if you got a lot of coolant in there, then you're going to pull it out and put it back in. But it will not cool your engine. 100% coolant is bad. It needs water to work.
That's what I need. I had one more question, if I may.
Okay.
Good. Let's see. I bought a fairly new car, and it's a, quote, certified car. So it's under their factory warranty to $48,000. I have cut the top radiator hose and put a sending unit to put my own water temperature. And now I've got a coolant leak. Doesn't seem to be where I did it. If I take that in, am I going to get heartburn over having done that to the hose?
It depends on where the leak is at. So if the leak is anywhere where you modified the cooling system, yes, you're going to get grief. But really and truly, why don't you just take it by somebody's shop and just say, would you pressure test this real quick for me? That's all you have to do.
Put the pressure on it, and then that'll be my answer.
Yeah.
I'd be just as happy if I never go to the dealer.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to comment on that landmine you just threw in front of me, but I think a simple pressure test. Now, if you drive it and it gets really hot, okay, you drive it, gets really hot, and you park it and you squeeze that upper hose and it's rock hard, that's the same as a pressure test. You just got to hang around, come out every 5 minutes or so, and see where it's leaking from. Because all we're going to do is look at the cap. It's a 15-pound cap. I'm going to pump 16 pounds of air into it, and I'm going to stand there until I find the leak. So you can do it without a pressure test. Just get the upper hose rock hard and hot, and then you'll find the leak yourself. Okay? All righty. I got to take a break. When we come back, and that's what you want me to do, right, Gil?
In about 1 minute, 10 seconds.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go to Bob then. Bob, I'm going to take care of you, and Gil can just wait till we're done. What can I do for you, Bob?
Mark, you know, at the top of the show, you were talking about oil change intervals.
Yes, sir.
In 1979,
I know you love engineers. My uncle was a PhD engineer. He built nuclear power plants. Uh-huh. He bought a 79 Ford Granada, and he didn't believe in oil changes because he thought that was all fostered by the oil industry. And he put Mobile One in. The day he drove it off the lot, he never changed the oil. He changed the filter every 5,000 miles and topped off the oil, and that Ford Granada lasted 85,000 miles.
Okay, and yes, I can see that's happening. But now this was, you said he bought an 80 model Granada, right?
Yeah, 79. Yeah,
okay, fair enough.
A few years.
Fair enough. Well, in 1979, I opened up a mobile station, and they came out with Mobile One at 25,000. Now you haven't seen a Mobile One can at 25,000 because we had motors lunch all around us. We'd put it in the car and tell them 25,000 miles, and they would drive at 18, never check the oil, and the motor would smoke, and they'd come back. And I can't tell you how many cars I personally saw that tried to go 25,000 miles with Mobile One. I'm not a fan of how Mobile handled that. I'm not a fan of them not raising their hand and saying, 25 was too long, we're sorry, we're stupid. But they did a good job in marketing and telling everybody, all you have to do is put this oil in and you don't have to worry about it again. It was a bad deal then. It's a bad deal now. But I have heard that same story before. I'm not in a position to argue with it. But I'm trained by Valvoline and Chevron. I've made my own quart of oil, and it passed all the tests. I know oil, and those engineers at Valvoline and Chevron and some of the other ones, they laugh at that story because the additive package, which represents 20% of the quart of oil, can't do that. And so we're going to have water contamination, we're going to have fuel contamination, we're going to have all this, and the water and the fuel is going to go through the filter. So what we're going to end up is with this really caustic cocktail of unburnt fuel, acids, water, and some other stuff that we wouldn't otherwise have. But I'm not going to argue with it. I'm not going to, and especially if it's an engineer. But let me ask you about your cousin that was an engineer. Did he drive a choo-choo train?
Goodbye, Mark.
Goodbye, see you. All right. We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about cars, laughing at one another, teasing one another, arguing with one another, and you're always welcome every Saturday, 10 to noon, right here on 960 The Patriot. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been servicing, repairing, and rebuilding and fixing leaks on transmissions since 1968. Phil's been around for a very long time. He started with old Power Glides and old Buicks and old Oldsmobiles and old Chevrolets, and he has morphed into the new electronics that we use, solenoids to shift your car, and we all do all kinds of fancy stuff with computers to give you the best fuel economy. So no matter what you've got, an old car, Phil can handle it. A new car, Phil can handle it. 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road. If you drive up and down Washington, he's been there for a very, very long time. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. To just give you an explanation, engineers in my world, regardless if they have an engineering degree in hydrology, which is all about water, they still have an understanding of everything in the whole wide world. And so when I tease them good-naturedly, when they say I'm an engineer, I ask them if they drive choo-choo trains. And it's no different than when they call me a grease monkey, okay? It's okay. We understand one another, and calling one another good-natured names is nothing wrong with it. So when I tease them about driving a choo-choo and they tease me about being a grease monkey, I'm okay with that. Mark, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Before I ask you a question, I just wanted to thank you so much for your shop and all the maintenance repair you've done on our vehicles the last few years. We're very happy with all the people and all the work that's been done on them.
I'm especially proud of my people, and thank you for that. You humble me, but I'm just telling you, it's the people there that make me look like I'm really smart. And the second-generation Salem families, my daughter and my son, are in predominant positions, and I'm especially proud of them as well. So thank you for that honor. Thank you.
Yeah, I also wanted to thank you for helping me fix my son's car. I talked to you a couple weeks ago. It had the overheating problem, and he had an estimate for between $2,000 and $3,000 for a head gasket at a different shop.
Uh-huh.
And we flushed the cooling system, changed the thermostat, and we applied the gasket sealer.
Uh-huh.
And he's been driving it for 2 weeks. All the symptoms are gone. It's not overheating. It's running well. So.
And that was the head gasket one where we supposedly had a head gasket, but I think what we decided to do was use a stop leak to see if that made a difference, and evidently it did.
Yeah, and okay. It's been running fine since. So
perfect.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I want to ask a maintenance question.
Okay.
I have three questions about power steering fluid. Number one, what's the correct way to change it? And then how do you get the air out? And do you have to use GM power steering fluid when the manual says GM power steering fluid?
No, you don't. You can use Dextron, and Dextron is the name brand for a General Motors transmission fluid as well as a power steering fluid. What you do is you have to take the return line, which is not the hair pressure line off of the pump, but the return line is, you know, sometimes just a clamp. It's a piece of fuel hose. That's
right.
The return. You're going to pull the return line off, and you're going to aim it at a bucket. But you have to put a plug, a cap, a rubber cap, over that service port, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to take the line, and now you have to hold that line. Somebody has to hold that line. And then we're going to take and we're going to put a funnel inside the top of the reservoir, and we're going to have somebody pouring power steering fluid in it. We're going to have somebody hanging onto that line, because if you let that line dangle and you start it up and you start turning the steering wheel left and right, that line's going to spray power steering fluid all over the neighborhood.
Okay.
So then, or you can put a line, hang a, you know, a gallon off of the hood, and you can just run a line into the reservoir. But it takes three people. And the bottom line is you're going to start it up, and you're going to just gently bring the idle up, and you're going to steer it all the way to the right and all the way to the left. Now, the guy holding the hose, squirting it at the waste bucket, he's going to watch the fluid, and it'll come out brown and black at the beginning, and then pretty soon it'll be cherry red, and it's at that point you stop. Now, for me, I have a $6,000 piece of equipment that we hook everything up, and we push a couple of buttons, and we walk away and go get a sandwich and come back, and the machine will basically take care of all that. But what I've described to you is the manual application of what our machine does. It sucks on the return line. It puts fluid in on the reservoir, and it just simply washes that system out, and it does it with pressure. Some of the times we're going to drive it. We're going to start it and turn the steering wheel left and right, depending on what the color of the fluid is, to get it all out. But you might want to call around first and find out how much someone's going to charge you to flush your power steering for this sole reason. You can't imagine what's going to happen if somebody loses control of that return line. You're going to have power steering fluid from one end of your garage to the other. And I just want to warn you that before we had these machines, that happened at my shop. I mean, we had some messes that were, the guys would take vice grips and they would take the line and they would clamp it to the 5 gallon bucket. Of course, they'd lift it up off the ground a little bit. Well, that hose would start flirting around and it'd come out of those vice grips, and gee, man, at Christmas, the mess we had was unbelievable. So that, let me ask you this. If it cost $100, would it be worth it to you?
It'd be worth it to me. I don't know if I can convince my son.
I understand. But you know what? This is going to be a good lesson, because if he doesn't pull this off exactly right and he ends up with that big mess, that's a good lesson, I think, one dad to the other.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
So, all right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much.
All righty.
And let me look at my daughter gave me a cheat sheet the other day, and I'm looking at power steering flush, and she says out the door pricing is as little as $110 to $135, and that's kind of an industry average, because we know what our competitors are doing, so my daughter and I position our pricing right in the middle of the market, so we're not going to be the lowest guys and we're not going to be the highest guys. So when she pops the answer of 110, let me see, 110 to 135, then there's a good chance that 120, 125 is the average. So that includes out the door. So that's going to be parts, labor, and actually labor and fluid, environmental tax, shop supplies, and sales tax. So when she talks about out the door, then she's already got all that figured in. So it's really probably going to be a $90 or $95 job. But then by the time you add all that other stuff, it makes it ugly. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I have a couple questions on my old Pontiac here.
Okay.
recently, this has just started. I don't drive it because I'm kind of in the process of restoring it.
Okay.
And every, maybe once a week, I'll start it up just to get it, keep it running and everything. When you start it up, it doesn't smoke when you first start up on a cold start.
Okay.
But when you let it run for a continuous time to operating temperature, and if you start to accelerate a throttle, it blows out smoke.
What color?
Not blue. I want to say it's kind of clearish white, maybe.
Okay.
But it just does it when you keep throttling it all the time.
What year Pontiac are we talking about?
It's a 77.
Okay. And when you start it up, because we have to hurry on this, when you start it up, is it fast idling for this period of time before you drive it?
No, it'll start up fine. It may go on a fast idle for a minute or so, and then it kind of kicks down.
It's a carbureted unit, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, well, it's not going to drop the idle until you stab the throttle. So, I mean, it's going to hold a fast idle until you stab the throttle. So, white is either coolant or it's actually gray, which could very well be the color just before black, which means it's running really rich. Does it blow this colored smoke at any other time other than under these conditions?
Not that I know, because I can't really drive it, because it's tore apart. But okay. It just, you know, when you throttle it, you know, from the pedal or from on top of the linkage, you can just kind of, you'll see it roll out. Sometimes it does it and sometimes it doesn't.
Okay, well, it could also be steam, because if you're starting it up and letting it run for a little while and shutting it off, I don't agree that that's something you should be doing on a hot rod that you're trying to restore. I think unless you're going to bring it up to operating temperature, and that car, it's 180 to 190, maybe even 200. Unless you're going to bring it up to operating temperature, I don't think that you're doing any good. That's kind of like taking your horse out of the barn, running him around the barn one time, and doing that once a month. It's not going to do that horse any good. If you want to have a racehorse, you're going to have to work him every single day. But to just get him and run him around the barn one time and do that once a month, it's not going to do him any good, and it's not going to do you any good. So I don't know if it's gray smoke, which would indicate fuel. I don't know if it's coolant, because it could very well be coolant. I don't really know. But obviously, if it's gray smoke, it's probably because the choke's a little tight on it, and it is running at a fast idle, which means it's running rich. So it could be that. But if you got a coolant leak and you're adding coolant to this hot rod on a regular basis, then it could be white smoke as well. But you had a second question.
Yeah. I just had some, before I moved, I took it to one of your shops.
Okay.
And I had a transmission leak at the tail shaft. And they fixed the tail shaft leak, and now it's leaking from the cable at the end.
Okay, the speedometer cable. Okay.
And it's got a good size leak to it, so I'm not sure if it's, I don't know if it's not tight enough or if there's
all right.
A seal in
there. All right, we got to kind of hurry. Did they replace the tail shaft seal only, or did they do the bushing in the tail shaft housing? Do you know?
I think they just did the drive shaft.
Okay.
Tail.
All right. Here's the deal. I can't tell you if it's their fault or not. But if it was my shop, if we did the seal, then the speedometer cable wasn't anything that we touched. So that, you know, that's something that's on. But if I pulled the tail shaft assembly, or the extension, we call the extension housing, the back part of the transmission, if I pulled it off and I did the bushing in there and put it back on, then yes, I was the last guy to touch that speedometer cable and that O-ring that attaches it to the side of the tail shaft. So that's the issue right there, is what did they do? And if they only did the seal, this isn't theirs. But if they did the extension housing, I'm quite sure they're going to fix it for you anyway. So I don't know what it is, but if it's leaking out of the speedometer cable, it depends on what they did on the transmission. But I got to run, but thank you very much. And if you have email questions or if you want to continue the conversation, mark at marksalem.com. Larry Harker's Automotive is at 38th Avenue in Indian School, and it's been there since 1967. You see this common denominator here? The shops that are on my best car repair shops list is a bunch of gray-haired guys that have been around the block. These guys have started with points and condensers in the 50s cars, and we're all the way up to total computers with no distributor and you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 oxygen sensors, and we understand all that. So again, Larry Harker's Auto, been around since 1967. Bob runs the shop. His wife Ellen runs the front counter, and Bob's one of those guys that I send people to when I hear this: I've had my car to 20 other shops and nobody can fix it. My answer is if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, take it over to Harker's. Because Bob's the kind of guy that you can wave that proverbial red cape in front of, and his horns will grow out of his head, and he'll run at you. Because he can fix it. He's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. But he also does oil changes and cooling system flushes and tune-ups and water pumps and timing belts and all that other stuff. But one way or another, 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you've got a car nobody else can fix, I'd probably call Bob. And if you need maintenance work, he's really good at that as well. So that's Harker's Auto, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue Indian School. Mark at marksalem.com. You send me an email, leave me your phone number, and I'll call you back. It'll be on a blocked line. But when you answer, I'm going to say, this is Mark Salem. I'm responding to your email. So you'll know right off the bat that I'm telling you who I am. Anyway, thanks for spending your Saturday with me. Please drive safely. Please wear your seatbelt, because you have no idea how beneficial that is.